Major Vizard, Reel 11. We were talking about how you were wounded on the 13th of September 1943 and on Hospital Hill at Salerno. And you were evacuated down the hill on stretchers and then from there...
Into the main dressing station. And also, the 13th was a lucky day for me because with that water bar had been a bit nearer, it would have been the same. Anyway, we were taken on board hospital ship. This was evening by now. I'd been wounded about in the afternoon, 4 o'clock, and I got on board the hospital ship, I suppose about 8 or 9. There were a lot of guardsmen there. I remember two guardsmen, particularly, a couple of commanders and a subaltern, and each had lost an arm. And I remember the company commander said to his colleague, he said, it's all right, George. He said, you can pick my nose and I'll pick yours. And I thought, well, that's good guard spirit. We didn't set sail until the next morning, but there was a lot of air activity. There were German bombers overhead, night fighters of the Allied forces up there, and cockfights going on. And quite a lot of fire actually hit the hospital ship. Now, I'm not sure whether that was deliberate or not. The hospital ship was ablaze with lights from stem to stern, and by day there were enormous red crosses painted all over the thing, especially from on the decks, as you can see it from there. But there was a good deal of air activity, and you could hear shrapnel, or I suppose from firing, hitting the steel decks of the ship. And but it didn't seem to worry people very much. Although I did notice one or two rather nervous individuals who were managing to go up companion ladders, miners' limbs, rather quickly. Anyway, we set sail, I think, about in the early morning before dawn, and we were strafed as we left, there's no doubt of that. But I don't think it was very serious. And we headed to Tripoli, Libya. And that voyage took about 2 days.
What were conditions like on board the ship?
We were grouped into desperate, urgent, can wait, from a medical point of view. And we were treated accordingly. There were quite a few burials at sea on the way.
Which category were you in?
I was in the urgent, and I wasn't in the urgent. That was a sewing up job. And,
not desperate, but just the middle category. Was there enough doctors and nurses to deal with?
There never really are, I think, on those occasions. But it was pretty good. They started the job with me on the main dressing station. I had clips right across. I got 96 stitches in there and back. And they got clips put in, which halted most of the bleeding. But the troublesome was the spine was chipped. And that's where I was put into the... because they wanted to do something about that. So it was regimental aid posts, dressing stations, main dressing stations. I mean, gory places, you know. Like a butcher's abattoir. It was shocking. The fellas covered in blood from head to foot, all over their hair and faces and everything else. Because they're really at the sharp end. Blokes coming in, and I mean, they've only got a matter of minutes to save a life. Amputations are carried out at incredible speed. I saw one fellow had his leg taken off. It didn't take more than about a minute and a half. Wait then. But they did a very hard, very good job. There are never, if you say, are there enough, well, there can't be enough. Because nobody knows the peak, what the peak will be on casualties. So you guess the peak, and you put in the medical facilities to meet that guessed peak. And if it exceeds it, then they're onto that. If it falls short of it, then there are too many. Or never can be too many, but there are adequate numbers. Anyway, I got dumped on the table at sea, and it was quite a swell. And I remember... they gave me pentothal and they put me out. I can remember before they did that, that we were, you know, the table was rocking away, and I thought, how the hell do they operate on tricky things? You couldn't possibly be a neurosurgeon on board a hospital ship. Anyway, when I came round, I was still on the ship, and I was all patched up. And he came round to see me, he said, I think it'll be all right, he said, that chip on the spine is the only thing that's troublesome.
Were you in much pain at any stage?
But principally the damage to the nerves and the spinal cord.
When did it start? I mean, straight away or...?
No, none. No, when the moment of impact was hardly any pain at all. Loss of blood, yes, but not blood. It began when I was, actually in the hospital ship.
Were you given anything for it? Morphine or anything?
No. They gave us pills. We had some pills to take, apparently a painkiller. Didn't do a lot of good. Actually, the spirit on board the hospital ship was one of the relief, you know. After all, these chaps, they were within a whisker of being a mortality. They were relieved to be wounded. Some of them were, and I thought, yes, this is the third time. You had two hospitalizations in Africa. This is your third time. That should be a blighting for you. And I was very happy because it's been abroad 2 years.
Did people really look forward to a blight here?
More than anything. You see, we were abroad for the neck end of 4 years, and we only had one leave in 4 years. And that was after lines of communication were secured in Europe. You could travel from Italy to the coast. Yes, and leave was everything. And mail. Mail was more important than food. The links with home, tremendously strong. Anyway, we disembarked at Tripoli, Libya. I always remember the Red Cross were there, and the Red Cross ladies were there. And every section of Red Cross or the parcel was deposited on your lap. And inside you found chocolate, a few cigarettes, a bottle of 4711 eau de cologne and so forth. And very nice gesture. And then we were taken into the South African, number one South African General Hospital, which had come up in the desert with the South African Defence Force. SADF, who had been fighting with the 8th Army. And they brought their own hospital. The girls were in khaki uniform, the nursing sisters were in khaki uniform, trimmed with purple. And I was dumped in this place, it was very comfortable. We were very happy. I remember we were very relieved. And they separated four of us. Fellow with a serious leg wound, in fact, the bone had been shattered, but he was there. And there was another fellow who had a very serious wound to his left arm, very nearly severed. And then there was a man who had shocking chest wound. I'm not sure. I did see, going up that beach, I saw a tree trunk with a pair of boots and a pair of battle-less trousers, and over the other side, there was nothing but a mass of charred flesh. I think there were flamethrowers on that beach. No one's ever said there were, but I think there were. And this man, looking at him, and I saw him, I reckon he was burnt. Anyway, he had a shocking chest and belly and so forth. And the leg and the arm and the belly and the back, we were segregated. And we were in a sort of wing, a niche in the ward. Cut it possible. Take it with you, assemble it, disassemble it, move it on and so on. And we found out why, because this was 1943, September, and Alexander Fleming had discovered his penicillin. And they had selected us as four guinea pigs to try this new remedy on. Well, of course, we were heartbroken because it meant we wouldn't be going home. There were a lot of other people who, in fact, when they became well enough, they went off and they got blighties. But this stopped us from getting. I was 70 on the third wounded, and I had two in Africa. I was only in for a fortnight with both on the front, went through there and so on, and they were troublesome. But it was the third time, and I thought, well, this is, nope, we had to stay there. And we were together, the four of us, and the fellow with the chest, and then the fellow with the arm, and the fellow with the leg, and me with the back, and the rump, and all that, because I was lying on the stomach, the sort of backside reared in the air. Anyway, and they injected this, it looked to me like tomato ketchup in a long syringe, they sort of in, and pretty painful that was. Anyway, they put more in every day, and this sort of thick, dark red, maroon kind of stuff in a big syringe, a really big syringe. They put in. And the same with the arm, and the same with the leg, and the same with the chap with the tummy, they all had it. And then after about a week, morning inspection by the doctors and nurses, they were standing around and saying, isn't it wonderful, well, that new growth and so forth, and this accelerated growth with penicillin. But I felt very angry. I was sitting and lying on my belly in this bloody bed, my arse cocked up in the air, and all these women standing around saying, isn't it wonderful? And because of this healing process. Well, I was in the hospital for 3 weeks, and by that time I was going to convalescence. And I and 200 others went down with infected hepatitis. The carrier was an Italian prisoner of war cook in the hospital kitchens. He should have been given a medal by Mussolini, put 200 of us out of action. It is the most filthy disease. You are covered from head to foot in yellow, weeping pimples, close together. Not only do you get the lemon eyes and the dark brown water of jaundice, but you smell. It really is a disgusting disease. And there were 200 of us. You are nauseated. You can't take any food. Anything you take is brought straight back. And of course, it means you're off the blood donor roll for life, infected hepatitis. So, by the time we recovered from this, and it was 3 weeks before we got over it, that meant that we'd been 6 weeks in the hospital. Firstly, of course, the wounding by that time, it was more or less cleared up, but we were still very weak.
Do you think the penicillin had actually accelerated the healing process on you?
Yes, no question. No doubt at all. I mean, we'd have been in hospital for months and we hadn't had that penicillin. Oh, it was wonderful. Had flesh wounds. Wonderful. Knits together. Wonderful. Anyway, then the time came for us to leave. And we were pretty glad to leave because we'd been in the hospital then 6 weeks. Three with the wounds, three with the hepatitis. And we were discharged, the officers were discharged to everybody was discharged to convalescent, tented camp. And I went to the British Red Cross officers' convalescent camp, which was run by a Mrs. Lex Lewis, who was a very fine woman, very stern, very strict, but very human. She'd be 50, I suppose, something like that. And she ran the place for the fairly strong, strict arm. I made friends with, because you see, I didn't really have many friends there at all. I mean, we were all like bingo balls in a bag. I made friends with a fellow from Rimi, who had come back from Italy, also with a Guards lieutenant who'd been with the his regiment in the Western Desert and come up through Tripoli. Tripoli fell on the 30th of January, as far as I remember, in 44, something like that, I don't remember. I remember making friends with him. He had somehow acquired a German staff car. Nobody seemed to ask any questions. And we used this for going around a bit to see the countryside. Convalescing. And I said to him, I can understand you, Brian, bullshitting your way through the. How do you get fuel? Oh, he did. He put his hand over the back and put a red hat on. I said, where'd you get that? Go up to Liz petrol pump, you know, fill up my man. No questions asked. Never that was important. And we stayed in that convalescent camp, I suppose, for 2 weeks. Might be three. And this will now be, must have been early November, I think, late October. And the time came for postings. And because I immediately said, well, I'm going to go back to Italy. Oh, you can't do that. We have no facilities here for posting anybody, because this whole area is part of Middle East forces. And you are Central Mediterranean forces, CMF. So I'm afraid we're going to have to return you to your admin headquarters, which is in Algiers. Well, our heart sank. Anyway, nothing I could do about it. Thinking back, it would have been a hell of a lot easier to have got from Tripoli to Syria, and it would have been from Algiers, but I didn't have the facilities then.
That's Syria, that's where the battalion... Yeah. Well, how did you know that?
Well, I didn't. Not then. And indeed, they were still in Italy in October. They got a leave, I think it was November. Anyway, we went down by train to Algiers, and I was put on the strength of number 3 IRTD, Infantry Reinforcement and Training Depot, which was at our old friend Fort Delow. Bit down the coast, and the current commandant was a Colonel Penn, and he was an older man than I was, 23, anyway, 24, but he must have been more than 35 to 40, and he'd been wounded in the African fighting, was given this job. And he said to me, there aren't any Durhams now in anywhere around here, he said. We'll have to think about a job for you. I was category B1 still. Anyway, long time had passed. And in the meantime, I was still on the strength of number 3 IRTV, and I enjoyed, well, I knew the area a bit from Bleda. It wasn't a great distance from Bleda. I knew the area a little, and I made the best of it. I swam a lot, and I had a lot of omelets and red wine and so forth.
What sort of duties did they have you on in the camp?
None. I just then they moved me from Fort Delow up to Algiers, and I was based in the marshalling yards of Hussein Day. Hussein Day, which is a big marshalling yard where all the trucks, railway trucks, come in and get shuffled and so on. And I was given a couchette in a sleeping car, and I reported to the I used to get out to number 3 IRTD every week, and all they were offering me, and they were pressing me very hard indeed, was to take a job as commandant of a prisoner of war camp. Oh, great job, they said. You've got your own bungalow, house boys, and you're here for the rest of the war. 30,000 Jerry prisoners of war production. Good staff, well trained. Ideal job for you. And I said, I'm very sorry, but it sounds wonderful, but I don't want it. I want to get back to the DNI.
Now, why? Because you quite wanted to get to Blighty. What made you... Can you just look at how you felt?
This wasn't Blighty. This was Casablanca, you see, or North Africa. These prison war camps are stretched all up and down.
Well, how would you... I mean, would you... How would you have felt if they'd said, right, you're going back to England?
Well, that would have... I don't know whether... It probably would have tempted me to go back. I think it probably would. But even then, it would have been a toss-up. The idea of being a prisoner of war, and the war finished for me, and over and done with, and sitting there in a bungalow with a wired area with fortress towers and searchlights and so on. Anathema. Horrible. So I said, no, I want to... He said, I can't. He said, but this time I've learned that the whole division was being pulled out for arrest and being sent to the Middle East.
Now, this is 46th Division, your old division.
Yes, the old division was taken out. They'd had quite a hard time with it. Anyway, they'd taken it. And I learned that 139 Brigade was being pushed into Syria, Palestine, and Egypt. And I knew that I'd heard through the grapevine that the Via the Barons were in Green Jebel. I told him this, and Colonel Pinn said to me, he said, I sympathise with you, but I can't post you from Central Mediterranean forces to Middle East forces without you go back through the UK to be reposted from there. And he said, no way am I going to send you back to the UK, more than my job's worth. So it was deadlock. He kept on saying to me, for goodness sake, you're sensible. Go and take one of these jobs. I badly need officers to go in and act. And the prisoners will respect an infantryman and have seen a bit of service. They would respect. I said, why don't you go to the 8th Army and get some of them? They'd respect them even more. Oh, he said, I haven't had any 8th Army men through here much. Anyway, it's deadlock. Now, meantime, I was in Hussein Bay sleeping in a two-shed in the old carriage, and by day, a little to do, I used to go out into Algiers, and in the evenings, I became accustomed to go to one or two especially favourite staminets, the Chateau en Fain, the Fain Gourmet, the Tavern Alsacienne, and so on, these, where you could get a cheap meal, quite a nice meal, with a bottle of red wine, and a glass of cognac. I also had a bottle of cognac in the sleeping compartment because it wasn't. I mean, there was a pole in the next one to me on one side, and I don't know who was on the other side, but he snored. It was not a very uplifting life, being shunted into a marshalling yard. So anyway, I used to go to these three, and there were some Canadians who used to come in, and I quickly chummed up with them. And particularly the two of them, one's called Al, and the other one's called Ernie. And Al and Ernie used to come in most nights. And we got to be quite a thing. And they were pilots, flying from Maison Carrie down to Cairo. Well, this interested me enormously, and I began to pester them. And they said, no, Al, we get more than our jobs. Take any money. Well, I kept on with them, and I think after about 10 days, and we used to drink more than was good for us. In fact, I encouraged that because it reduced their resistance. In the end, they agreed to take me, but they said, it's entirely up to you. We never saw you before in our lives. Anyway, I only had what I more or less stood up in. I couldn't very well start moving out of the couchette with the kit bags and I did have a small pack. And then I made my way to the Maison Carrie and the train station. And they seated me on a parachute between them. It was a Beaufort, some name like that, they did tell me, I can't remember, Lutikoff. And in that instant, of course, I was absent. I knew that, and I knew perfectly well that I was doing what I thought was right.
She AWOL, absent without leave.
Yes. Not a nice sensation. Anyway, I wasn't experiencing it then. You know, I was too excited. The idea of getting, moving, you know, towards the family, everybody joining in again. So I knew where I was making for. We came down with a couple of stops, refueling points in the Western Desert. It was littered with burnt out tanks and God knows what. Anyway, we arrived in Cairo, and they said, well, this is it, friend. You're on your own. We never saw you before in our lives. And if you ever mention this, we should have had that one. So we shook hands and wished each other good luck. And I saw a 1500 old truck with people getting on it, so I went over and got on it too. And it went, we landed at Cairo West, which is one of the airports around Cairo, pyramids are over there in Giza.
And whenabouts would this be? Because the battalion left Italy at the end of February 1944, a bit later than you thought, according to the book anyway.
February, is it? As late as that?
27th.
I wasn't there, you see. I thought it was towards the end of the year. But
27th of February 1944, they left.
And they went to Middle East. The old troop ship, the Polish troop ship.
Sobieski.
He came back on Earth in the Middle East. I got on this truck anyway.
So would this be around March or April that you'd...
Much before that. I was away a long time. I was away from the time that I left, which was, I think, in November. But you see, I'd been the 13th of September, say the 15th of September in hospital. 6 weeks is the end of October. Down to Algiers, you're into November. I think it was the end of November that I went away. And I didn't arrive back at the battalion until end of March or something like that. Anyway, I got into this 1500 weight truck. I had no idea where it was going, but I just got into it. And I asked to be put off at the transit officer's mess, where I booked in. I have my blue book, 170478, with RAEC. And they gave me a room, and a tall black servant, Sudanese. And I stayed a couple of nights there, and I went down to GHQ, where I contacted, I knew I was making for him, Colonel Harry Lowe, who was a senior officer in GHQ on the Q side, Durham. And it took me about the best part of a week to get an appointment with him, because he was a busy man. Anyway, I got in, and I felt quite a bit frightened, really. And I told him the whole story, and he sat there like a Buddha without saying a word. And then at the end of it, he said, well, what kind of bloody fool are you? And I said, well, I'm sorry, mate, but, and I'm trying to get back to the battalion. So he said, well, I can understand that, he said, but you've put yourself in considerable jeopardy. So he said, I can't give you a movement order, you're an absentee. I can give you a ticket on the train to Haifa. I can give you a set of webbing equipment, which I didn't have. I can give you 4 blankets, and I can fill your water bottle with rum, which I will do, all things on the queue side. So he did that.